I don't think I ever forgot that you can choose your own freaking adventure. And so I chose this one. I just kept turning the page.
This is your nautical lantern on the dangerous seas of darkness. Let's push off from the placid shore of the status quo and explore what's beyond the horizon. I am your host, BT, and this is Truth and Shadow, your podcast of the supernatural.
Greetings, listeners. Welcome to another interview episode. Today we have Tobe Johnson on the show, and our discussion will venture into the realm where speculation and skepticism collide. We will discuss purported connections between Sasquatch, or Bigfoot, as common parlance might say, and UFO encounters. Throughout the conversation, I must express the importance of maintaining a critical lens. While tales of cryptids and unidentified aerial phenomena may capture our imagination, it's essential to approach this with a grounded and balanced perspective. And as your host, I am committed to unraveling the mysteries that lie at the intersection of the supernatural and our Christian faith. To understand the connection between Sasquatch sightings and UFO encounters, we must first delve into the annals of history, where numerous accounts suggest a correlation between the two phenomena. Throughout the centuries, tales of strange lights in the sky and encounters with hairy humanoid creatures have been reported in various cultures around the world. In many cases, these sightings occur in close proximity or during the same time period. You know, one of the most compelling aspects of the Sasquatch UFO connection is the geographical overlap between areas known for frequent Bigfoot Sasquatch sightings and regions with high numbers of reported UFO sightings. From the dense forests of the Pacific Northwest to the desolate expanses of the American Southwest, there are numerous locations where both phenomena have been documented by eyewitnesses and researchers alike. A popular theory among researchers is the idea that Sasquatch may be an interdimensional or hyperdimensional being capable of traversing between different planes of existence. Some believe the UFOs may serve as vehicles or portals through which these interdimensional beings enter our reality. And building upon the interdimensional theory, some may even speculate that Sasquatch could have extraterrestrial origins or be associated with extraterrestrial visitors. This hypothesis would suggest that UFO sightings in conjunction with Bigfoot encounters could indicate the presence of the extraterrestrial studying or interacting with Earth's wildlife. You know, perhaps the most compelling evidence for the Sasquatch UFO connection comes from firsthand testimonies of eyewitnesses, such as our guest and those who he has encountered and spoken to about this topic. You know, many of the individuals report these sightings, describe encountering strange lights or aerial phenomena in the vicinity. Moreover, witnesses often report experiencing similar psychological effects during the Bigfoot or UFO encounter, such as feelings of disorientation, reports of missing time, and even heightened senses of awareness. And while the connection between these two encounters is intriguing, it remains a topic of controversy. Skeptics argue that correlation between the two phenomena may be a coincidence, even influenced by cultural factors. And of course, we need more empirical evidence to establish this kind of relationship. And critics may point to the lack of physical evidence, and as well as the prevalence of hoaxes and misidentifications in both fields of study. And despite skepticism from the scientific establishment, dedicated individuals and groups of researchers continue to investigate the potential connection between Sasquatch and UFO encounters, drawing upon interdisciplinary approaches that can combine elements of cryptozoology, ufology, parapsychology, etc. And so these researchers aim to unravel the mysteries surrounding the phenomena through field investigations or data analysis, even collaboration with other experts. These individuals and research groups seek to shed light on the nature of the Bigfoot-UFO connection and its implication for our understanding of the universe. You know, it seems we are left with more questions than answers at the end of any of these discussions. The mysteries surrounding the phenomena continue to captivate our imagination. It inspires others to go out and research, and it fuels speculation about the nature of our own reality. You know, whether Sasquatch or UFOs are linked by a common origin, or simply coexist in the vast expanse of existence, remains to be seen. One thing is certain. The quest for truth will always beckon us to explore the unknown and embrace the mysteries that lie beyond the boundaries of our understanding. Could it be that in our search for the answers, amidst the chaos of the unexplained, we inadvertently find ourselves grappling with the complexities of human perception and the enduring allure of the unknown? Join us in our discussion about Sasquatch, connection between unknown aerial phenomena, and the spooky. Do you find yourself intrigued by the inexplicable, by encounters that defy logical explanation? What if I could share with you the journey of someone who asks those questions? Someone who walked the line between skepticism and belief, encountering things unexplainable, a witness to the extraordinary. Have you ever felt the need to challenge the status quo, to resist the comforting embrace of the everyday? What if I urge you to open your mind to the possibility that we are not alone, that there are forces at play beyond our comprehension? I introduce for you one who has trod where many fear to walk, has dared to question. He is the author of the Owl Moon Lab books, host of the Strange Bro Radio. He is the Sasquatch sleuth, the cryptid clue finder, the examiner of the unexplained. Tobe, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me, Brennan.
Wonderful. I found you because you do a lot of stuff with cryptids, and I haven't gotten into any kind of cryptid guests at all, and I'm really curious about your background and where you got started.
Well, I guess our story begins in the little town of Springfield, Oregon, home to Bart Simpson and myself, Tobe Johnson, right outside a defunct logging town called Thurston, Oregon, my high school alma mater. And, you know, growing up out in what is known as the Willamette Valley, you get used to the lore of what goes on in the Doug Firs. And that lore goes, I guess, in many different directions. But on top of that, you know, the whole tip of the spear has got to be Bigfoot.
Right.
And so I'd always put Sasquatch in the vein of something that was absolutely possible. It seemed as though it was something that was likely, just given the fact that there were so many witnesses that would come forward and talk about their encounters, and you hear about such. But I didn't really do anything with any of this curiosity I had. I was curious about any mystery afoot. And that would have been ghosts and UFOs as well. And, you know, when you go into a public library, you go into the school library, there's one little darkened corner where you kind of see like the Time Life ESP books all lined up. And Right. Then there's the Loch Ness Monster and Robert Stack's there with his raincoat, you know, pitching a magazine about unsolved mysteries. And then there's a Bigfoot book. And so I lumped them in just because everybody else seemed to lumping them in and these mystery school categories. And if we were to go back where this curiosity maybe came from, well, maybe it came from the fact that I was an only child. Maybe it came from the fact that, you know, I had a lot of time to look into this stuff because I was raised by a single mother. And, you know, there's always the boob tube on kind of as the external babysitter. But it probably went to a late night showing of, you know, it's maybe like his 5 or 6 year old brain digesting Close Encounters of the Third Kind, which really in my book that I write about this mystery place that we're going to be talking about, the Owl Moon Lab, it really is in the mind of Richard Dreyfuss's character, Roy Neary, who's perplexed by the strange lights he sees by the railroad tracks. Huh. And it sets him afoot. You know, it's something he can't deny that happened, where he saw these UFOs at close range, and it affects him so badly that it, you know, one moment in time, he's sitting at the dining room table with his family, and they're all looking at him, seeing what's wrong with Dad. And he's making a mountain out of mashed potatoes, and he has no idea why. And that's kind of where this Bigfoot thing is, in a roundabout way, is that I think that we're kind of making Bigfoot the issue here. And we have all these other questions here as to say, well, now, wait a second, you know, this mashed potato construction of Sasquatch seems to be leading to these other things surrounding this. And that's kind of, yeah, I guess my wheelhouse. What happened is that, you know, around 2005 timeframe, my son and I had found a single track. Mm. In the upper part of Thurston, known as the Thurston Cliffs, which is just a local hangout where a lot of dropouts seem to hang out and go up there and smoke some reefer. And, you know, if you don't wander into them, you have a pretty good time and a pretty good trail. So I was actually pretty familiar with the area. So I took my son up there, and we ended up finding what looked like a barefooted track in the icy mud. And that got a larger question going between my child and me, you know, do these exist? Or is it somebody hoaxing us? Yeah. And it just turned out that we actually had a neighbor that was pretty obsessed with the whole subject long before I was, and looked at the photograph that we'd taken of this barefooted, I think it was like a 13-inch five-toed track with a arch heel, ball foot, and it was going into the blackberry brushes. And so, you know, he looked at the picture and said, you know, it may be fake, it may be real, but they're certainly real. Even if it is fake, you know, somebody's faking legit activity.
Right. So, yeah, exactly. Somebody's imitating something real. Yeah, I spoke mm-hmm. with M.K. Davies a while back, had an opportunity to listen to him tell his story about Bigfoot. Yeah, and I was pretty impressed with the video coverage, and I think that's the Gimli Patterson film
mm-hmm.
that he had basically updated. And it's really a curious thing to me because, you know, you read, you know, I mean, I grew up in a Christian household, so you read things from the Bible, and you get stories about individuals like Esau, who's the brother of Jacob, and he's known as a hairy man. And then, you know, you just kind of file that in a space in your ADHD brain, and then later on you hear about Heidelbergensis man is the gnarly man or the hairy man, and so you're stuck on all of these ideas that out there potentially is a upright walking hominid
mm-hmm.
or something that seems to be an upright walking hominid.
Well, absolutely. I mean, if you go back through history, and you know, we have a documentary out called A Flash of Beauty, Bigfoot Revealed, which chronicles first-person narrative investigation of sorts of what Sasquatch does to people,
yeah.
How it affects their lives, positive or negative. The second one just came out, A Flash of Beauty, Paranormal Bigfoot. And in that part two, we do show some footage that shows proof of how historical the idea of the wild man is.
Yeah.
I mean, it goes back to, you know, the idea of what was called the green man. If you go to any great cathedral in Europe, you'll see a relief of a man covered in leaves and foliage. Usually, sometimes his lips are pursed as though he's whistling, which is certainly, you know, Sasquatch or First Nations people idea,
right.
Especially with totem poles. But the idea of a man living in the woods is also this idea that goes back to other gods like Cernunnos or even gnomes of a certain variety or ogres and things of that nature. You go back to the story of Gilgamesh. Of course, we go through Old Testament and scripture, you get into the idea of there being giants, and then you get into the idea of the Nephilim. And then you get into what the First Nations people have been talking about long before we got here, about the idea that there is this other clan or other tribe that lives between two worlds that is represented with all the other living creatures on their Pacific Northwest totem poles, usually in the most powerful spot, which is the base
right.
of the half man, half monkey. And so that is where our American story of understanding Sasquatch is. And that's kind of where the first conversation I really had that really reached into the mystery of this had to do with a gal named Esther Stutzman out of Oregon. She is a oral tradition historian with the Kalapuya tribe. And I was so eager to meet these people, being such a noob, you know, circa 2006, 2007. And I did everything I could in 2007 to meet as many of these people that I could put in one room for a weekend.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't even know what I was doing. I just thought, well, I have a, you know, like a technical theater background and a production background. I'll just put on like an event and I'll get this Esther Stutzman here kind of as like my anchor host for the First Nations perspective. And she would have nothing to do with me.
Oh, wow.
She took my call eventually, but, you know, I could kind of understand it. You know, she just had this eager, you know, white dude calling her up about Bigfoot wanting to get to the bottom of stuff. And she's like, oh, hold on there, buddy. And it actually came from a place of not me understanding to take a breath and look at the fact of the historical relevance of what we were talking about. In fact, the Kalapuya take it so serious, who they call Chichu-Chippy, that you can't even discuss it during the wrong time of the season. So I think I called like in spring. I couldn't talk to her till fall when it was safe to talk about Chichu-Chippy.
Wow.
And so this really blew my mind that like people cared enough to say, I'll talk to you, but you're not doing this the right way. And so that kind of respect, and I have to borrow a quote from one of the main stars of our documentary, TJ Ravenwolf, where he says, forgive us for talking so plainly about what we're about to speak of. And that's really the kind of Bigfoot I'm interested in.
Yeah. Yeah, the one between two worlds, absolutely. The paranormal. You could almost say not just supernatural, but meta-natural.
Well, yeah, my girlfriend calls them Wildergeist because it is so close to the spirit world.
Mm.
And it, you know, it seems to fit nicely. Another coined term is a land spirit of some kind, which really harkens back to, you know, what they spoke of in Europe all those years ago, but also to the Native American roots. And it seems to be, in my opinion, what we're talking about. I mean, yes, we can call them cryptid, but what the hell is a cryptid?
Right.
A cryptid is not a part of our fossil record. We don't have dogmen, lizardmen, you know, mothman. We don't have any of these paranormal biological entities. We don't have any kind of forensic, you know, take it to the bank proof.
Yeah.
Well, I think I might actually, but we'll get into that too.
Fair enough.
But yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that really is. It's just like we're talking about something ultra-terrestrial, supernatural. It is a conscious-based life form. I think that's what Jacques Vallée struggled with, looking into UFOs. And again, going back to Close Encounters of the Third Kind, the character that's in there from France,
yeah.
Based on him. But the this conscious-based life form seems to almost be godlike. And I say that when I do my presentations, that there is this demigod uncomfortable thing that we have to wrap our mind around, that the use of magic comes from what they have the ability to express.
Yeah, because we don't understand, being limited as we are in our three-dimensional thinking, to be able to compute.
Correct.
Comprehend the phenomena. Things appear the way that we assume they are. I mean, how many of us know stories of looking, waking up in the middle of the night, seeing a shadow cast by moon from the window and noticing it's just the hat rack or it's just the coat rack, but then it moves. And we're left with questions of going, wait a minute, was that pareidolia? Did we assume or did we create out of our own figmented imagination that we saw something inexplicable? And then the brain creates its own story that we were asleep, we were having a dream, and we relate it as such because that's where these monsters, if you will, these phenomena we don't understand exist.
You know, I had no idea how orchestrated. I mean, what you just described here is kind of like the analogy to Pluto's cave, where they're, you know, see the shadows moving on the wall and think that it's actually dangerous outside, but it's just the puppet masters moving things. And, you know, this is a total sidebar here, but there seems to be this forgetfulness of how there seems to be a hidden hand around us that orchestrates events to skew a narrative and make a narrative happen. And if people just look at the last 3 years, you can see plainly that there are certain narratives that are being pushed and other ones that are being covered up. And this happens as well in this this mystery that we're talking about here. It's I mean, if we look at 2017 with the New York Times article about the Tic Tac, and now everybody's on board and it's cool to look into UFOs, and now we're just supposed to forget that all mainstream media, that all the Pentagon, that, you know, the entire government, DOD, US complex has been covering this up and lying and omitting. And possibly, I mean, responsible for the death of people.
Right.
So this is, you know, I'm completely naive and probably still am to how deep this is entrenched. And one of the things that, you know, I never really took in full account is how much money is tied into all this stuff. And, you know, professors that have tenure and you know, how diabolical it would be to lord over somebody and say, if you tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth, you will lose it all. Oh, and yeah. I just never thought that way because I was, I'm an artist. And so for me, I just, you know, I have an artist's budget. I don't have a lot to lose, but if you had a ton to lose and you wanted to go forward with transparency and be a whistleblower about something like this, they just take everything from you. And it's way crazier to believe in Bigfoot than it is to believe in UFOs.
Right. Yep. Especially. Yeah. I mean, I grew up along the same lines of looking at any of these that happen to be of interest, you know, the mysterious. You know, right. You probably blame that on reading the Boxcar Children's books or any set of mystery novels as a, you know, child set, you know, designed to really inspire the kid to go out there and gumshoe it up, you know, and figure out the world for themselves.
You know, and bringing up those books brings it to the choose your own adventure novels. Which for me was, you know, primary. That was my source of reading. Especially, you know, in grade school. And I don't think I ever forgot that you can choose your own freaking adventure.
Yeah.
And so I chose this one. I just kept turning the page.
Hey there, podcast fans. Did you know your sport keeps this podcast going strong? By donating just a few dollars, you're helping us create more episodes packed with valuable insights and entertainment. Visit our website today, truthandshadow.org, and become part of our mission to inspire and educate. Join us in making a difference. Thank you for your generosity.
It was always different. Let's say I turn the page and I interview a witness that day, or I turn a page and I meet a new First Nations person who says, oh, I can talk about Skookum, and I can talk about them in the summertime and not the... It was always different, like a bit of a challenge for the fact that I had to do the work and go find these people. But then pop culture said, oh, about 2010, something happened. I don't know what it was. Oh, I do know what it was. It was Monster Quest. When frickin' History Channel and Doug Hychek from Monster Quest turned up the heat and started making every show about a cryptid, Bigfoot was just like their big thing, right? And so all these other shows started to do the same thing. And then Finding Bigfoot came out, and it was game on as far as commercial success. So that's when it became super easy to find people to talk to. And that was really my own goal for the first 4 years, is get as much information about how to have your own experience and, you know, chase down the truth, no matter how strange, no matter how far. And so I went to the far reaches of the Pacific Northwest, mentally trying to wrap my mind around what some of these people were saying, which was either flesh and blood,
right,
and damned if you, you know, start looking at this from the paranormal way, we'll just forget you ever, you know, existed, or just be an independent thinker. And so that independence of thought was why I got into Bigfoot. I wasn't already listening to what the institutions were saying. So when these flesh and blooders kept saying this to me, I was just like, oh, you're part of the institution. That's not cool. That's not why I'm in this. I'm in this for fun. And if this is wrong, it still seems like way more fun. And so I followed the fun. And the fun is what led me to seeing the first paranormal thing I saw when I was looking for Sasquatch, which were these lights,
yeah,
right? Like if you go looking for Bigfoot, you will see mysterious lights in the woods in proximity. And so seeing those changed the way I looked at this.
Yeah, I was sitting there thinking about what you were saying about the powers that be, basically. I mean, it's like when we become adults, we really realize how Lord of the Flies this really is. You know, we've got Jack over here controlling the strings because he's stolen the glasses. And, you know, what's he doing? He's going through the whole story, manipulating everybody and destabilizing the idea of a perfect society by giving way to everyone, or by making everybody so afraid of a specter that's not even real. Mm-hmm. And that's this manipulating force that seems to guide a lot of...
And they have, you know, pardon my French, but they have FU money to where they can do whatever they want in international waters on their yachts,
yeah,
and do things covertly. I didn't even know this world existed till, you know, 9/11 was my big wake-up call, 2001. Yeah. I had no idea that something like that could possibly be orchestrated and covered up in some degree, because I certainly don't think we're getting the full story, or that Kennedy could be assassinated and those records held for eons. Look at Epstein's list. Do we even know what's going on there?
Fair.
So all of these things, right? The things that we can agree on that are real janky sounding, they exist in these other covert worlds through these clandestine private organizations of usually prior enlisted men that are co-opted through, you know, outsourced DOD measures. So these things are covered up all the time, including the Bigfoot issue here. Now, do I have any specific examples? Well, we do in our documentary. We interview a guy that comes forward. His name's Kyle, and talks about how there's teams that are basically blanketed out for problems in the woods, especially Bigfoot problems, right? Mm-hmm. And that they'll send out kill teams to dispose and kill Bigfoot. So I've heard this on and off. I've never met Kyle. We interviewed him, you know, in the auspices that we'd never release his identity.
Right.
Anyway, you definitely hear those kind of stories, but let's go back, like seeing these lights. Like, if we're talking about an alien that is terraformed and lives amongst us, I could see it being a problem because they have no control over what these beings do and how they do it, because they're like ghosts. They're like aliens. They do what they want, how they want, pretty much wherever they want. And that just sounds as crazy as a bug's ear, but I started to invest my time mainly in these contactees, you know, like not only alien contactees, and we talked off the air about Daryl Sims, who's I believe he's ex-CIA, right?
Yes, he was.
And he's known as the alien hunter who looks into abductees and the biological evidence left behind, including implants. Now, Daryl Sims actually was the first person I ever met back in, I would say it would be 1992, in Eugene, Oregon, at Lane Community College, with a crowd of about 25 people giving a presentation on implants. You know, that really inspired me, seeing this dude up there taking a chance with his implants sitting there at the little college table for us all to see. But in the background, he had these funky little fingerprints, these handprints that he had collected. They looked like burnt or stained handprints on the window panes of abductees and on the door handles. I always kept that in the back of my brain. Now, as you get invested into this Bigfoot stuff, not only do you hear about the lights, which are like these dirty colored lights that are kind of look like glow sticks. You know, it's not like a really bright light. They're just kind of these balls of light that flash or roll around the forest.
Tradition.
Yeah. But also amongst the mix are these handprints that Bigfoot leaves behind, and people were saying, yeah, these are just giant, you know, obviously these are giant's handprints. You can see that they're probably Bigfoot handprints because of how huge they are. But
yeah.
They also don't come off of my car. They don't come off the tent. They don't come off of the house. They're like this oily substance, and they're just kind of locked into whatever they touch.
Mm-hmm.
So get a load of this. Like, eventually, I collect these handprints, like three really good examples of them. And here we fast forward from like 1993 to 2018. And there's Daryl Sims.
Mm-hmm.
And Daryl's looking at my freaking handprints saying, oh my God, you know, these are just like the handprints we collect off of abductees' houses. And so here's this corroborating data of these very strange handprints being interested by, you know, a pretty seasoned dude like Daryl Sims, who's worked with Dr. Roger Lear, I believe, right, removing implants.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things that's really peculiar talking about the evidence left behind is, as far as I've understood and heard, it phosphoruses. It glows in a ultraviolet light.
Yeah, it pops.
Right.
If you have a black light, you can get in fact, Daryl sells those at his booth.
Of course.
And that's where I first saw one used, was Daryl talking about the phosphorus glow of the alien handprint, probably like the grays, right?
Right. Talking about melting into, yeah.
Well, yeah. And why that may be more interesting than we know. And, you know, I suggest we should probably start bringing Geiger counters out with us, because if this is tied to something, you know, when you have a UFO experience, there are health consequences to it. And some of those are radiation burns or nausea and sickness. And another link to the UFO world is nausea and sickness being directed at you.
Yeah.
Not like infrasound. Infrasound is a biological explanation that we can explain through predators like lions and elephants. Okay, Sasquatch can do this to individuals. You could be standing in the woods with five knuckleheads and nothing happen, and one guy or one gal in the woods is going to get hit with this, and they're going to get mind speak too on top of it,
right,
from something that says, here's why I chose you. You're going down. You better go home. This is what I want you to do. And then they get sick or they start crying. Like, I've seen this before. And I've kind of semi felt this before. I think on one specific occasion when I got extremely, extremely sick, it was had to do with some haunted land that we were camping on. I don't think it was Bigfoot necessarily.
But it's but a phenomenon, again, yeah.
All this stuff coalesces and overlaps. You don't really know what you're messing with. And that's kind of the deception part of it. You just don't know. I mean, if I were gonna say that all Bigfoot experiences are beautiful, loving, healing experiences of enlightenment, that's just not true.
Yeah, no, we hear stories like that, but they seem to be far and few between, as opposed to the people who have negative experiences.
Yeah.
We talk about, you see lights when you are somewhere around where a Bigfoot could be, but you also end up bringing something home, and there's usually some kind of PK or environmental interaction between you and the house with, we would call it poltergeist activity, but most likely it's residue, PK residue from your experience.
Yeah, that residue is like a half-life. It's like a radiation half-life. Like, it dies off over time based upon, A, if you're going to the hot zone or if you're engaging in it, if you're entertaining it, if you're trying to interact with it, or in our case, gift it. And yeah. So this is the other thing that people... Now, I don't know about what... when you live in a haunted house, I'd guess the last thing you probably are doing is trying to gift the ghost.
Right.
And probably the same for abductees. I don't think they're leaving cookies out for the grays.
No.
But Bigfoot people, this is what they were doing. This is what, the natives were saying is that, oh, yes, they would come to our tribe. Yeah. And they would trade salmon or elk with Sasquatch. And so and that's what we did. And we had tremendous success at this place we call the Al Moon Lab in a little sleepy town in Cottage Grove, Oregon.
Yeah.
And once we started to gift them, it just got exponentially more active day and night.
And it leads me to ask, Tobe, if we can talk about anything that's kind of spooky. I mean... Yeah, we talked about Daryl Sims used to...
You want to get
CIA,
spooky.
CIA is pretty darn spooky.
Yeah.
But, since you were down at... you've been down to Skinwalker Ranch. And, typically Wendigo, the Rake, mm-hmm. basically some kind of shape-changing... I call him the failed shaman, basically. The murdering shaman went out to become the good guy, but failed. And I was wondering if you had any stories...
Oh, yeah. I'll give you a wild one here that has to do with Skinwalker Ranch. So, first of all, let's talk about Skinwalker Ranch. I'd never been there. I was asked to host an event in Vernal, Utah. Mm-hmm. I got invited to a star watching party outside of Skinwalker Gate. It was just low key. Just maybe five of us standing out in the middle of the Uinta Basin.
Right.
And someone drove by and said, hey, what are you guys doing? And just like, oh, we're doing our star watching thing. And this guy said, oh, yeah, cool, man. I have a booth at the event as well. I do this kind of meditation stuff. You guys are welcome to come to my house. I own some property about 3 minutes down the road here. It already sounds like a horror novel, doesn't it? And so...
one of you is not going to survive.
Right. He goes, yeah, usually I charge people to come, but you guys can come for free. I think these guys are going to flake on me. And I just do this light therapy kind of thing. And, I forget what it's called, but like flickering light therapy to put you in an altered state, basically, to do stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, sounds like a wild time. So, dude... We get there and we show up about an hour later, and he's like fully ready for us. And it is like a David Lynch movie. Okay. And we get out of our cars and we're walking through Utah desert. No idea what we're doing, but we know that this is the place because he said that we wouldn't miss his gate. And I was like, okay. And we had like a little flashing light at the gate, and underneath the flashing light said, you wanted to know, so here you are, F around and find out. Right. And I was like, this must be the crazy guy, let's go. So we get there, and he's dressed like a Hayoka. So the Hayoka is like their, like a Native American tradition of like a joking wizard, you know, like a, it goes okay. deeper than that, but basically like the court jester of the tribe, but more of like a magical powering wizard type entity or member of the tribe. Here he is dressed in kind of an outfit reminiscent of what a modern day Hayoka would wear, with like a zigzaggy shirt and a big weird funny hat. And he's standing in front of this 1920s silent movie that is streaming on the side of his RV in front of a roaring campfire. And this black and white movie is like witches, you know, around a cauldron, you know, like a guy being tortured in the background, like real German 1920s noir kind of stuff. And then he's got, so we're like, what is this place? Like, what's about to happen? I can get into the nitty gritty of this here, but here's what I think was happening with this dude, is that I think this dude wanted to put us in an altered state to get our life force off of us. And I think he bought some property less than a mile away from Skinwalker Ranch to become a Skinwalker. I think his hope was, is I'm going to, because this is what he said to us, dude. We go inside his crazy tent that he had all his flashing lights in, and like a pagan, like a full on satanic altar, and like a giant piece of iron hanging in the middle of this tent. And, which is, I don't remember what that was used for, but bones and iron, I guess, is something crazy. But he said, I just want you people to know that you have to sign a contract if we're going to go forward. And we're not here to dissuade the spirits. We're here to invite them in and all their craziness. And that's when my girlfriend looked at me and said, yeah, I think we got to go.
No, it definitely sounds like some straight up psychodrama. Dude.
I mean, doesn't that sound bonkers?
Well, I mean, it sounds super, I mean, I'll say occult, but I don't mean it the way Crowley would have meant it. I mean it the way that the primal witch would.
Yeah. I think he was there to manifest negativity in hopes that he could be kind of become one with what the Native Americans called the cursed land. And right. He wanted to get in proximity. I mean, he could see the gates of Skinwalker Ranch where he lived. And that whole Uinta Basin is like supercharged for whatever reason.
Well, yeah, it's home. There's three rivers that run in there. I think it's the Bear, the Provo, and I can never remember the third one. Anybody who knows waterways, and definitely water that runs, because the Uinta Basin's big on what, quartz? Quartz and granite or something like that? I mean, that stuff just puts off amazing frequency work. And so I would not be surprised at all that there's some kind of woo-woo.
Well, wherever you have quartz and running water, you have this paranormal stuff. And most of the time it's down. And this is what Travis Taylor talks about in one of his talks, is that you have this concave shape of the Uinta Basin down at the base. And these concaved, almost like parabolic dish shaped areas at the base are the apex of these telluric energy fields that, you know, just kind of swirl around into the quartz and the water and just flow. Like, this is one of the theories, is that you'll find paranormal activity in these apexes of these shapes.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, you know, bones and iron, typically we deal with, that's fey creatures. I mean, trying to keep the fairy folk away.
It looked like a giant, I think it was a railroad spike.
Sure.
Like an honest to goodness, like iron railroad spike hanging down.
Sure. Whatever it was definitely psychodrama, and it's definitely designed to get you into a fear-based state.
And then I asked him, I said, dude, what is that smell? Because it smelled kind of like sacred smoke to me. It didn't smell like incense. It smelled like something different. That smell really caught me off guard. It wasn't off-putting as much as it was unusual. And he gave an insufficient answer to what that smell was. Sure. I'm like, oh no. What is the, now I really want to know what that smell is.
Human flesh. Yeah.
Or do I? Yeah. So we got the hell, we made up some, I don't remember what we said. We had to get the hell out of there. And we ended up leaving three of our friends there that were kind of down for it. So we asked them how it went. They said, it was fine. You know, he was just kind of trying to put on a big show that he was this kind of, you know, weird avant-garde artist. And we didn't give into it. We just did our thing. And I was like, well, good. I'm glad that it turned out well. Because I don't think it was going to. I don't think the plan was for it to turn out well.
Right. Whether the individual knew what they were doing or definitely trying to get some kind of attention.
Well, again, it goes back to what we talked about earlier. Like, there are nefarious plans by people to harness power over this world of esoteric magic and secret knowledge, hidden knowledge. And Bigfoot is a part of that. As stupid as that name is, obviously Sasquatch is a much better name for what we're talking about here. But they are spirits. They are a spirit being of some, we all are, but they are a land spirit that access, you know, the physiology of being a flesh and blood being that is a child, because there are young ones and they grow up to be old ones. They have family groups, but they go someplace else. I don't know where they go, how they go. There seems to be evidence that, you know, they can access doorways that we can't see. I've talked to people that said they've seen them run into trees. We have photographs of them that seem to be kind of liquefying or dissipating as they walk past you. But maybe they go underground. Maybe this is an underground issue. Maybe we have a giant cave system. Certainly we have a lot of missing people in and around cave systems and such, and bodies of water. So are they responsible for the deaths of missing hikers and such? Yeah, probably. But so are people, right? Like, we're responsible for killing lots of people.
Yeah, humans do enough of their own, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes you wonder if the human brain is not remembering something in its genetic memory and putting an image or putting a form to the shadow on the wall. And that's exactly what we begin to see. Is it a matter of pareidolia? Is it something from genetic memory? Or is it something that's been here from time immemorial, to quote the indigenous, the Indian?
You know, this is just the time of trusting your own instinct and going with your gut, because we no longer know what is authentic. In the world of AI, we are all equally effed. And all we have right now is our gut and our instinct to parse this matrix that we're all living in. But this goes in the world of trying to understand the spirit world. You know, my gut along the way here has been a little bit biased because I'm an adrenaline junkie and I don't do drugs, but I do chase Sasquatch. And it is it's a total drug.
That's right.
Your intuition may be overridden by your adrenaline. And a couple occasions, it sure has. And studying this property was one of those times. And I had people actually say, you're taking it too far. You need to back off. Get out of there. What are you looking into? Oh my gosh. I had my son say, Dad, no, I'm never coming there again. So all these things have been said to me. I've had people give me back Bigfoot tracks from there because they feel like they're haunted.
Okay. There's an energy associated. Fair.
Yeah. Yeah. So all these things have been said to me along the way, but most of the people that I'm friends with that have experienced similar things all agree that whatever we're talking about here is not demonic. It is okay. Something outside of the written record. We don't know who these people are. They seem to be a type of people because they have language. They seem to have a written text. They use stick glyphs. We call it glyph Latin. It looks like little tiny runic alphabet things that they do with twigs. So there's something forgotten that is occurring here, at least by our ancestors here.
Yeah, it's definitely within the memory that we usually out there in the woods, and all of a sudden we feel like we should probably go home. Well, Tobe, as we wrap it up, would you like to say where people can find out more about you? And
oh, yeah. Well, first up, if anybody wants to find me, they can find me over at A Flash of Beauty. You can find that podcast YouTube channel at A Flash of Beauty Bigfoot Revealed. It's also at BigfootDoc.com. And that's BigfootDoc.com. That's where our docs are, Bigfoot Revealed, Flash of Beauty Bigfoot Revealed, and A Flash of Beauty Paranormal Bigfoot. And I think we're in the we're the number two documentary as of the 22nd in all the world, not just in a category. Like, this is the number two documentary streaming period. Wow. And so it's, you know, that speaks to a hunger for not only the type of movie this is, but the subject matter. And Bigfoot's never been taken seriously. And I think the reason people are taking it serious right now is that we're linking it to UFOs, and it's making a whole lot more sense because we interview people that see, you know, incredible stuff. And so that's happening. And then the book, The Al Moon Lab, A Paranormal Experiment, is available on Amazon or HangerOnePublishing.com. And if you get the book, it's more than a book. It has QR codes embedded in it. And there's about 4 hours worth of audio and video and pictures embedded in the paragraphs, so you can relive the experiences. And that's what's happening.
A lot better than a choose your own adventure.
But it definitely inspired, dude.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Thanks for coming on the show, Tobe. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, you bet.
Thank you for listening. This is a free podcast based upon the value for value model. If you find value in this or any episode, you can return that value by liking the show, subscribing to this channel, leaving a review, or sharing with a friend on your social media accounts. You can also donate on my website. Thank you again. This is BT for Truth and Shadow Podcast. You are the light in the darkness.